on the record. It's 3/22, April 14, 2010. Just a second, off the record. Go ahead and call the afternoon session of Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 3/23, Wednesday, April 14, 2010. This afternoon, we have five items on the agenda. We're going to start with Senate Bill 4, Coastal Management Program. We're going to recess to the call of the chair because we have to go to the floor. Then we'll come back, do Senate Bill 309, Gas Exploration Development Tax Credit, House Bill 365, Fish Processor Fees, License and Records, House Bill 424, Geo Bond, Education Library Research Facility, House Bill 280, Natural Gas Storage Tax Credits. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and start the afternoon session, bringing back Senate Bill 4, Coastal Management Program, and ask the Commissioner D.C. in the audience, come forward, please. We have had two hearings on this bill for those watching at home. We have adopted a CS version S, and we have requested at the last meeting yesterday that the administration departments respond with any language changes or suggestions in version S, and the commissioner, my understanding, is here to do that verbally or in that or about direction. So, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Hartig. I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation and here to speak on SB4CS. First, I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity to testify. I realize that this is a very important bill, both to the co-chairs, to the sponsor, Senator Ellis, and all the other members of the committee. At DEC, we work with many of these coastal communities, day in and day out, on village safe water projects and other projects. So I know in talking with the mayors from these communities, including Mayor Itta from the North Slope Borough, how important this is to them. But it's also important to all Alaskans, because what we're talking about here is a fundamental change in state policy. What we're talking about is taking basically the keys to unlocking Alaska resources and saying the decisions on whether projects go forward or how they go forward will be transferred from state agencies to local boards. And as much as we respect, you know, the communities and the community leaders from these coastal communities and other communities we serve, there's just a fundamental difference in policy here. From the state administration's viewpoint, we believe that the decisions on major projects like oil and gas projects, port projects, et cetera, really needs to reside with the state agencies. And there's a variety of reasons for that. One is just fairness. Around the state, we'll have products in all different communities. We think that the same rules should apply to anybody, wherever they go in the state, to have a project. Likewise, we feel like every Alaskan is entitled to the same level of protection, environmental protection. So if there's a project in one community, the people in that community should have the same standards as another community so they can be assured that they have at least the same equal protection from any consequences from a project. Likewise, we think that the state, in many instances, not all instances, we realize there's different capacities in different communities, is perhaps in a better position to look at the science and the engineering and other technical questions that may be associated with a decision regarding a project and how it might or might not go forward. And then lastly, I can tell you from my own experience at DEC that these decisions, particularly environmental decisions on whether projects go forward or how they go forward, are not easy. There's a lot of pressure that comes on you. I feel it every day in the decisions I make. In terms of people that feel strongly one way or the other, you know, there'll be economic arguments, jobs that are at stake. Others will look at it as competing between different interests, fishing, mining, oil and gas. Others will look at it as challenges to subsistence and other very important values. And how do you balance these concerns? And it's difficult at the state level, and I think if you take it down to a community level, to a community board, it would be extremely difficult for somebody to sit there and make those decisions with those kind of local pressures on them and do it in a way that is fair, open, and impartial. So I think that the bottom line here is that because of these this strong shift in policy that SB 4 represents, it's been extremely difficult for the administration, despite all the good efforts and dialogue that's been taking place over the last year, to reach a consensus, you know, on terms that would allow us to go forward and enhance the input and involvement we get from local communities, which we want on state decisions, without transferring this authority and risk and creating the risk that I just described. The governor and the administration would like to see communications continue. We'd like to continue to work towards an objective that enhances that communication and input from local communities, but we don't see this as the vehicle because of the substantial difference in the philosophical underpinnings of what belongs at a state decision level and what belongs at a community decision level. So we looked at whether there would be language that we could offer up today, but we couldn't come to those terms just because of this such a difference in the philosophical underpinnings here that it would represent so many changes, you know, to the language of the bill that it would not look like the bill that you gave to us. And so we do want to keep the communication open. We really respect the issues that are being brought forward by the local communities. We really want to work with the legislature and those local communities towards a mutually acceptable solution here that's good for all Alaskans. But unfortunately, we couldn't offer up language today, and I apologize for that, but it's we felt we at least should come here, somebody at a commissioner level, and explain why.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You say continue the dialogue. I think that I talked with the Senate President, and we'd asked for dialogue with the third floor and have not received a response. And I've talked to the mayor of the North Slope Borough, and he's been requesting a meeting for several months now, and no dialogue has taken place. So to use the word continue, I think, is a little bit exaggerated. You know, I think that the dialogue needs to begin. And I guess, what changes in version S do you see need to be addressed?
Co-chair Hoffman, through the chair, the first is my understanding is that the governor's door is always open to Mayor Itta and other local leaders, and that I don't know whether it was a misunderstanding or what, but I understand that there was a discussion about another meeting. I think there's been 6 or 8 meetings over the last few months, but that the question was posed is, you know, is there a change here in the administration's position that would warrant another discussion? And when Mayor Itta's office advised was, no, we're still of the same position, that they didn't pursue further having that meeting. But if there's a misunderstanding there, certainly we apologize for that. The door is open to any discussions with Mayor Itta and other local leaders. Again, as far as changes that might be made here today to SB 4, with all due respect, we think that until we come to terms on the kind of the philosophical underpinnings and where the authority would lie for the final decisions, you know, particularly on large resource projects that affect the state as a whole, and how we can assure that those powers that would reside, you know, in local entities would be made in a way that wouldn't be inconsistent with law that applies to all Alaskans, then it's hard to move forward with specific language. But that doesn't mean we want to close the door on this by any means.
Senator Hoffman.
No further questions.
Any questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Hardick, thank you very much for coming up this afternoon. It was certainly a not a good showing by the administration to not have anybody of your level come up here and look at the paperwork that had been submitted to the administration 24 hours before that. Now, the administration has had 48 hours to go ahead and look at this, and I'm assuming that there's not been a close review of the CS that's before us. But what I see is that prior to 2003, when the coastal zone management plan had been gutted by one of the previous administrations, there had been plenty of development that had gone on throughout the state of Alaska, whether it's down in the southeast with timber, whether it's in my area, down in the lower district for mining, whether it's been up on the north slope with oil development. I didn't see any problem with that. Why can't we go back to that same model that we had before, that we're not even seeing resistance, we're seeing a downright stonewalling by the administration related to what's going on here. And you talk about fairness. I'm just trying to be fair to that person that's living along the coast throughout the state of Alaska, who's got stuff going on in his backyard that he doesn't have the ability to go ahead and put his voice in there. Fairness. He's being dictated to some bureaucrat down here in Juneau who's probably never even been out to that area. So when we talk about fairness, with all due respect, Commissioner, let's make sure we're thinking about the little guy that's out there, that's just trying to eke out a living. So that's what I'm asking you to do this afternoon, and as we continue on, because what I see is nothing but frustrated people that I represent. And when the Senate leadership cannot even get a meeting with the governor, forget about including the North Slope Borough Mayor, when the Senate leadership can't even get a meeting with the governor, that flies in the face of fairness. And as was pointed out by the previous speaker, communication, that doesn't even look like it's on the agenda. With that, all due respect, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Any other questions? Senator Olson, may I have a motion?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 4 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes be passed on to the next committee referral.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee, version S, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note, and the fiscal note is $118,700 from the Department of Environmental Conservation. Do we have objection?
Object.
We have objection. Comment?
For comment, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think we have a case here today of extreme frustration, and I see that. I see that in my friends around the table and in the Senate, in the House, in this building, in administration to some degree, and I regret what I see in the eyes of people. As my father would say, two things, that, son, two wrongs don't make a right, and I think that axiom fits what's happening here and what's happened over the last couple of years, but specifically today. And the other one, I guess, that from a heartfelt piece of it, the other thing that my father often said is my bunion tells me that what's happening is not good. And my bunion tells me that what's happening here is not good. And I'm just concerned because, quite frankly, I don't understand the implications of the bill. They may be good, they may be bad, but the haste in which we're doing some things, frustration or not, just gives me a bit of at ease. And with that, I remove my objection.
Any further objection to move the bill from committee? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee. The next committee referral will stand at ease to the call of the chair, and we'll be back after we finish our floor work, and we'll finish up today's labor. Again, that'll be Senate Bill 309, Gas Exploration Development Credit, House Bill 365, Fish Processing Fees and Licenses, House Bill 424, Geo Bonds, House Bill 280, Natural Gas. We're at ease. Come back to order. This is a fine looking committee this afternoon. We've got it's 5:20 just for the clock. This is Wednesday the 14th. of April 2010. This is the second half of the afternoon portion. We are going to get through four bills, hopefully, today. See how long it starts running too late. We'll kick some of these till tomorrow. It's been long, several days. House Bill 280, Natural Gas Storage Tax Credit, followed by Senate Bill 309, Gas Exploration Development Tax Credit, followed by House Bill 365, Fish Processors Fees, License and Records. And we'll conclude with House Bill 424, Geobond Education Library Research Facilities. These are all first hearings, and again, if we go late, because I have another conflicting meeting here after, a little after 6, so we'll see how it goes. House Bill 280 by Rep. Hawker regarding natural gas storage and tax credits. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. We will not be taking amendments today, although there's a couple that have surfaced, so we'll have some discussion on that later. If I could have Rep. Hawker introduce himself and walk us through the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. I am Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, South Central Alaska. House Bill 280 that we're bringing before you today is a bill that we have labeled the Cook Inlet Recovery Act. This act addresses a very critical issue that all the communities in South Central Alaska, and for that matter, the entire rail belt of the state of Alaska, are facing. Our consumer energy, that for heat and electricity, is based nearly 100% on natural gas that comes from the Cook Inlet. We have been blessed and fortunate for the past 50 years that gas has been essentially in unlimited supply. It's supply in far in excess of what our community and our consumers have required. Unfortunately, with the passage of time, we are at a point where the productivity of the fields in the Cook Inlet has reached its natural decline point, to where we face the very real prospects within another two winters of not having enough gas delivered from our fields to meet the peak demands on the coldest day of the year. That's a very terrifying prospect when you think of approximately half of the population of the state of Alaska on the coldest day of the year not having lights, not having heat. I mean, this is truly a life safety issue. It's an issue that the utilities, the communities, I believe my mayor, Mayor Sullivan from Anchorage, may be with us today paying attention to this. It's been one of the lead priorities of his administration, is addressing this issue. The utilities, of course, they've been working to address this issue over the past several years, and it has reached a point where the stakeholders, again, the communities, the utilities, the consumer interest groups, have come to some conclusions, very clear conclusions, on what is needed to meet and to resolve this issue head on. There was a study that was just recently completed that identified seven immediate needs. The Cook Inlet Recovery Act bill in front of us addresses specifically four of those needs in providing relief on the way forward. Most importantly, in the Cook Inlet, it is universally acknowledged that in order to meet those peak winter demands, we need to develop what you would call major gas storage facilities. And this isn't like a propane tank sitting out in the back of your house. We're talking about taking exhausted or nearly exhausted gas wells and converting them into storage for new gas that is produced. So effectively, you would be taking gas during the warmer months, the months of less demand, pulling it out of the ground from one well, literally pushing it back down into the ground in an old depleted well, which essentially recharges it and allows it to, on those cold winter days, you can pull gas from both wells simultaneously, literally, you know, effectively and possibly doubling your deliverability. Again, it's a way of increasing the deliverability needed to meet those peak requirements. This bill provides a facilities development credit against the income taxes that might be incurred by someone operating that facility. A key point in that these facilities would be delivering gas for utilities and ultimately through the utility to the consumers in South Central Alaska. This credit is a setup so that it becomes a mandatory flow through to reduce the cost of gas to the consumers. At the end of the day, none of the credit proposed here would stick to the fingers of the developer, the project owner. Every penny would flow through to the developer of the natural gas storage facility. Regarding these gas storage facilities, as we, the legislature, came into session this year, the issue of would these storage facilities be regulated by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, or would these storage facilities not be regulated by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska was an issue that was addressed by the RCA. The proposed developers of the facilities, looking for a degree of regulatory certainty, knowing whether they would or wouldn't, had approached the RCA for clarity. The RCA decided to ask the legislature for clarity, and we received a message from the RCA saying, tell us, do we or do we not regulate gas storage in the state of Alaska? This bill provides a direct answer to that question, and it provides that and the bill goes actually a bit beyond just defining the regulatory responsibility. Gas storage of this capacity for the purposes of use of in-state gas is something we've never had in the state before, and we do not have any regulatory structure on our books of statutes on how these gas storage facilities be regulated. So for a developer who wants to come in and do this type of a project, an admission critical project, they need regulatory certainty, some regulatory clarity, a regulatory framework, which is provided by this bill. Specifically, the bill provides that gas storage facilities that are either operated by an independent party and are open access to all comers, essentially a gas bank, if you're running a gas bank, or if you are a public utility who is developing storage for your own purposes to benefit your own consumers, both of those are regulated by the RCA, fully regulated. The bill also provides that if a producer operating in the Cook Inlet needs to build a storage facility solely for their own purposes, and that would be basically, think of it as building a warehouse for their own gas that has not yet entered into the market, just to manage their ability to meet their delivery requirements, those proprietary storage facilities are not RCA regulated. However, those proprietary storage facilities also may not avail themselves of the credits available in this bill for gas development gas storage facilities. The bill provides the parameters which a gas storage facility must meet in order to qualify, and some technical provisions making sure that the credits only offered to a facility that truly is aiding in meeting the deliverability required by the public utilities. The issue, another thing we needed to do to facilitate delivery of gas, maintenance delivery of gas in South Central Alaska, is to address the difficulties the RCA has had in approving long-term contracts. In recent years, a couple of major contracts were denied by the RCA, and in hindsight, the reflective hindsight, maybe they ought have been approved, and we would have been a little bit less of a precarious situation in our communities. The two changes this bill offers to provide guidance to the RCA in evaluating long-term procurement contracts or supply contracts that come before them are, first and foremost, the RCA is directed to consider the impact on the consumers if the commission rejects the proposed contract. And it sounds simple, but the RCA has never had to think of the consumer or the consequences of their saying no. And we call this the consequence of saying no provision. Working with the Regulatory Commission's executives and their legal counsel, they have helped us write this provision, and they believe it really does give them a different standard and a very important standard in evaluating contracts. The second thing we direct the RCA is to recognize the value of a utility holding a diversified portfolio of gas supply contracts with different pricing mechanisms, so we don't get into a, so to say, overweighting your portfolio in one particular investment vehicle. Same thing here, recognizing that for public utilities, it is good to have a diversity of contracts, supply lengths, supply terms, that is a healthy thing for the for the utilities themselves, and that the RCA should keep that in mind as they review their directions. The bill also, in regarding these contract approvals, the RAPA, what is called the Regulatory Affairs and Public Advocacy Division of the Department of Law, also is very active in its consumer watchdog interests in looking at these proposed contracts. The bill provides that the RAPA shall also abide by the guidance that of being very cognizant and having to evaluate the consequences of their saying no or their consequences of opposing a long-term contract. Lastly, the bill before us brings forward provides for an increased access to existing development incentives the state offers in statute currently. And this is to facilitate, and it's another one of the major findings, is that we must do what we can do to justify or to promote additional exploration and development of the remaining gas in Cook Inlet. And these credits have to be, or this increased access to existing incentives and credits has to be framed in the context of the Cook Inlet itself, the context of its geology. The past 50 years where gas has literally flowed like water, and we have had unlimited supplies of gas available to us, they have come from five major gas domes, geologic structures where huge, massive amounts of gas were trapped. These huge structures are easy to identify, were relatively easy to identify, and again, at the risk of having a petroleum engineer, petroleum geologist say, that accountant really doesn't understand the challenge, but to say they were relatively easy to develop compared to where we're at today. In that these major gas domes are reaching their point of depletion, the gas that remains in the Cook Inlet, as the geologists explain, exists in much smaller concentrations in what they call stratigraphic traps, areas where you've got your geologic structures that collide under the earth and create a small place along which the gas becomes trapped. You think of it in terms of the big domes where these great big reservoirs of easy to identify gas, but what's left are small bubbles of gas trapped in three-dimensional space. And in this case, three-dimensional space is the sandstones, rocks formations underneath the Cook Inlet itself. Very difficult, very expensive to access. As a result of this geology, where we've had in the past these five major gas domes, and have not had the need to pursue this much more expensive, much more difficult gas, we have had a very low density of development, both exploration and development wells in the Cook Inlet. They've been concentrated around the major formations. We need to, and I am proposing in this bill, that we modify our existing exploration development incentives that to specifically address and make it possible to have the increasing exploration and development within the Cook Inlet that is so important. Specifically in the bill, we are going to be eliminating what I call the Cook Inlet penalty, and that is currently this our statutory construct, which was built really around the North Slope. And, folks will recall that in the last several years, we of course have gone through some significant changes in our oil and gas production tax statutes. The issue driving it, of course, was largely the issues with ELF and its where it had reached the end of its service life, and we really had replaced the ELF structure for oil on the North Slope. Around this table, many of us were here for that. The summer of 2006, that most of us probably don't remember as a summer, as we did two special sessions to address the North Slope gas production tax. Well, of course, as you try to change one element of the tax structure, we start to realize we've also got to deal with, the summer of 76 was all about the oil ELF and really the oil production tax. But as we address that, and it's the same motivation that really has led to your committee's bill regarding the decoupling issue, is that we knew we had to deal with gas, and we put in a couple of stopgap measures that summer, one on the North Slope that now needs addressing in the context of AGEA. We also, as a reactive mode, we put in a provision as an afterthought dealing with the Cook Inlet. We allowed the Cook Inlet because we recognized how challenged it was, and it was a different geographic region than the North Slope. We allowed the Cook Inlet to retain the ELF tax structure. The ELF tax structure being substantially less in that it does not involve the progressive, it does not have the progressivity feature that the North Slope tax structure has. Reflecting the age, the challenge, the difficulty dealing with those fields in state. But as we provided credits, the exploring production credits for the North Slope, we said, well, they're going to, or we, those credits were to be applied across the state. We looked and said that the Cook Inlet, which has a lower tax rate than the North Slope, for a producer to avail themselves of the credits, they had to pretend they were paying tax at the higher North Slope rate, and they would not be allowed to use that portion of the credits that is to the attributed difference between the ELF taxes they were actually paying and the North Slope taxes. Seemed to be a matter of equity at the time, but in retrospect, what it's done is it's made a dollar of exploration elsewhere in the state more valuable than a dollar of exploration in the Cook Inlet. So that provision is essentially, if it is counterproductive to making the Cook Inlet or keeping the Cook Inlet on equal footing with other areas inside our state to attract investment dollars. The bill here allows a dollar spent in Cook Inlet to be applied, and the credits earned on a dollar of investment in Cook Inlet to be applied universally across the state as anyone else's credit. We also, in our deliberations of the past couple of years, when we have production credits in statute, we only allow the explorers to amortize those over a two-year period. You can earn your credit, and you must amortize it then over 2 years. This bill allows those credits to be amortized in full the year they're incurred, rather than having to amortize them. Again, making a more increasing the access to existing credits, but to promote the Cook Inlet development. We also have a period that there is the well lease expenditures. Very much like the governor proposed on a statewide basis, while I emphasize this bill limits these changes to the Cook Inlet region, this bill allows the utilization of the CapEx credit, the capital expense credit, for expenses incurred in managing the wells. And we've got language in the bill that, I can't put my finger on it directly, specifically says that if the well work is done to maintain, enhance, or improve the performance of the wells, it has to be a activity that specifically is for enhanced and additional recovery. You can also use those expenses, or you can claim a capital expense credit against those expenses. That language in particular has been, we've been about three different versions of that. We've worked very, very carefully and closely with the Department of Revenue in determining the language for that section. There's also currently in statute a tiered exploration credit, and it's in this current statute it's tiered. You can get a 30% credit or a 40% credit depending how far away from existing well structures you're working. This bill eliminates the differential and goes straight to a 40%. The key point here being that Cook Inlet is a relatively smaller region. We're not trying to explore the vast stretches of the North Slope, still looking for larger fields. We need to be promoting development within established units, a much tighter geologic footprint, a geographic footprint. So again, we're allowing the full credit regard. We've eliminated the tier, the distance tier. And then we also have added a provision into this bill that allows production credits to be sold back to the state, and in this case, without having to have the company continue to make or to match the investment further. Again, the idea is to attract these better capitalized, well capitalized, independent explorers to the state of Alaska, to the Cook Inlet. Now, back in with the changing geology that we're experiencing in the Cook Inlet, this is an area that, as I've talked with the producing companies, the explorers, producers, we are not a, and I say we, the Cook Inlet region, that is not particularly attractive to the large international companies anymore. The big domes have been developed. What's left are the type of gas plays that the smaller, independent, aggressive companies are after. But when you've got the large international players who have options all over the world, their capital naturally tends to go to the larger plays elsewhere in the world, not to the Cook Inlet. So we're looking to continue to evolve ourselves into more of a small play world and attracting the right kind, the right scale of explorers and developers into our region. So, Mr. Chairman, that's sort of the bill on an overview. I'd be happy to talk in detail on any of these points, and I do have with me Ms. Jan Levy, who is a former oil and gas attorney with the Department of Law, who helped us write this bill. She's the new Larry Pursley in the building. I really hope that the president doesn't hire her away from me.
Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative Hocker, for the explanation of the bill. I take it from some of your last few comments that when you talk about new and smaller developers and explorers, that obviously, or maybe not obviously, I guess the question is that the tax credits could be applied to Prudhoe Bay, could be sold, I'm assuming, because they could only be applied if somebody was a producer in both places. So are we talking about those credits being sold as well? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, sir, Senator Thomas, the benefit there is what we are allowing the someone who develops a credit or earns a credit through their investment in Cook Inlet is allowed to approach and get a direct refund of that tax through the tax refund, I call it the tax refund fund. And I might sidetrack on you just a little bit too, and it's something I have a bad habit of not acknowledging. While the credit section of this bill, we've kept it to the Cook Inlet Basin because that's where the exploration work would be done. The gas facility development pass-through credit to consumers and lowering the capital cost to developers would apply also to the interior of Alaska here. It's been very much carefully crafted so that we're not giving any unanticipated credits to people working on the North Slope. This was not intended to be a North Slope benefit to a producer, but to benefit consumers and communities, and that credit would be available to anyone developing gas storage facilities in the interior as well. And as I understand it, the FNG plans for bringing gas to your community entail development of significant storage capacity, and in the possibility there was development in the Nana Basin, that would also require storage capacity that would be included in this bill.
If I may.
Senator Thomas.
Just to clarify, but you say that's for storage and not necessarily drilling that might take place in the interior or other basins, or am I misunderstanding?
That, unless Janet or Jan kicks me in the back and says yes, the answer to that is no. The credit facilities, we're keeping them to the Cook Inlet.
And if I may ask, why is that when there is other potential, and that concerns me a bit, that we would concentrate only on one particular area, and I was curious what the reasoning was.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the reasoning was that I knew coming into this legislative session that there was a great deal of concern about expanding credits across the state, and we were looking very much to focus on in this case, the gas development in the Cook Inlet Basin. As we thought about the interior, it seemed that the majority of the potential there was going to be gas coming off of the North Slope itself, and in the governor was looking at his own bill on a statewide basis, that we were leaving that issue to the statewide bill, and in this bill, again, focusing it only on the Cook Inlet to minimize the economic consequences.
Okay. And one other
follow-up?
Certainly. The idea of the storage in Cook Inlet, some are concerned that when you store gas, draw it and then store it, that the inconsistency potentially of not taking it on a consistent basis, where you're drawing some, and in the case of potentially Anchorage, where we get to the winters and you need gas for a certain period of time, and then you're slowing that down or maybe completely cutting off the draw from the storage, that you lose potentially a percentage of that gas when you start and close off and restart, those types of things. So if you agree with that concept, is there not also concern that, and I realize it may be something that is left for other legislation, but the idea of the consistency being maintained by the ability to export gas through the Nikiski plant?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I absolutely, the solution to providing energy security, gas security in South Central Alaska and the entire rail belt is going to definitely be a multifaceted approach, as you recognize there. Storage is but one element of that. I personally believe that absolutely maintaining the export facility is a very important element to meeting that the constant year-round deliverability. In fact, it's, you know, the export, if we use the word export, it tends to have a pejorative that, well, why are we, you know, letting our gas go away? If we think of it more as a production buffer that allows us to continue and maintain a steady production from the inlet, that is exactly as you noted, sir. And again, while I'm not a petroleum geologist or a reservoir engineer, it's the things you learn in this job are quite interesting. One of the things I've learned is that gas wells do not come with rheostats, as you mentioned. They don't turn up and turn down real well. So when you're running the production wells, you really want to keep them in a fairly tight band. And in a perfect world, there will be continued a sufficient level of gas developed and available in the Cook Inlet to continue to maintain either an export or a value-added utilization plant. We would use the storage. Again, it's for peaking demands. It's not to store all the gas that's going to be needed in the winter. Sure. It would be to meet peaking demands. But the continued existence of the export buffer is something that's very much in question. That permit expires in, I believe it's March 31st of 2011. There was a difficulty in the renewal for 2 years the last time this came up. There's question certainly when the bill was introduced, there was great question as to whether the operators of that facility were even interested in extending it. And again, we were looking at if that was to go down and not be extended within 2 winters, we were facing just a critical problem. Subsequently, ConocoPhillips has made the public statement they are going to pursue an extension of that export permit, but putting all our eggs in that basket, I think, would be perhaps a bit unwise. And even if it is renewed, we're still going to be needing storage facilities to meet the peaking demands and the security of those peaking demands on cold days.
We're going to go ahead and modify the schedule. I can see the clock is getting away from us. So we'll take, so folks don't just sit here and through the dinner. We're going to take the rest of the agenda up in the morning. We'll start with Senate Bill 309, and then we'll do House Bill 365 and House Bill 242. We're going to not go past 6:15, so we got about 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes. We have any other initial questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hocker, how many of these facilities do you think you'll need?
Through the chair.
For the Anchorage Bowl, I gather, or all of Cook Inlet.
Through the chair, Senator Egan. That is a question that I personally can't answer, because it certainly would depend upon the size and number. But anecdotally, as I've talked with folks in the Department of Revenue, it would be the Department of Natural Resources, and industrial players, including both producers and the utilities in South Central Alaska. I think it's certainly envisioned there would be at least one large open access facility, one very significant facility, and then perhaps other facilities that were necessary to sort of to address the storage requirements more on a regional basis, or a smaller on a consumer level, or I say consumer, on a customer level basis, or for an individual producer who may wish to avail themselves or open set themselves up in providing open access storage facilities to facilitate the production of these perhaps smaller volume wells, where they really are going to be needing to store their own gas in order to meet the delivery requirements they might have in long-term contracts with the ultimate consumers. So I guess my minimum number now to protect, if I might, Mr. Chairman, to protect the Treasury, this is something that I know the chairman here is always concerned about, and we were very much too. This, we have limits in here that in the bill that establishes the credit, that in an individual facility, we've got a $15 million limit on the amount of credit. That translates basically to a 10 BCF facility. And so we worked, again, very careful with Department of Natural Resources, Department of Revenue, and we've the sidebars on what we require of the facilities to qualify for the credits are pretty tight, to and designed specifically to prevent gaming the system on either being able to provide adequate deliverability, or for someone that might arguably try to permit a facility way in excess of its the needed capacity for the region. So we've tried very hard to put sidebars in here.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Any other initial questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we've got 4-0 fiscal notes in your packet from the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and the Department of Administration and the House Finance Committee. can we have Marcia Davis come forward? Maybe you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, please.
Senator Stedman, my name is Marcia Davis, and I'm Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue.
So, Ms. Davis, what's this bill do, and why should we do it?
Well, the bill certainly, we've worked closely with Representative Hawker, and it has been designed and carefully crafted to achieve the aims, I think, that it's been directed at, which is gas storage. They work closely with us to ensure that there would not be an abuse of the gas storage credit through perhaps inadvertent or overuse for depleted reservoirs. Our concern was North Slope, and you know, somehow reservoirs would get turned into gas storage facilities. But through the work with Representative Hawker's office, we were able to establish size criteria, that it be a depleted or nearly depleted reservoir, which AOGCC will determine, and also the fact that whatever reservoir qualifies is going to have to be a regulated storage facility as a public utility under the RCA. So that's a big pill for anyone to swallow if they're going to get into it. They're going to be a bona fide gas storage facility, and we're satisfied that that shouldn't be susceptible to abuse. And as far as the other elements of the bill, we certainly can't contest the idea of a credit, or the movement of a capital credit from 2 years to 1 year, or the reinvestment requirements, because the governor's bill itself went picked up those elements and had those applied statewide. So to the extent this applies to Cook Inlet, those are certainly consistent with the governor's intent.
And then I assume then that the administration supports this bill.
We're comfortable with this bill, yes, sir.
And then on page 7, when they talk about the jackup drill rig they're trying to entice into Cook Inlet, is there any chance that this credit mechanisms can go negative on us, where we actually pay out over 100%?
Senator Stedman, and you're referring now to the to Bill 309?
Correct.
Okay. Yes, we're comfortable with it. We've done a review of the jackup rig analysis, and our analysis is from a revenue standpoint, we're looking at a cost of up to $54 million for the three jackup rigs with the potential, if they discover resources in the Cook Inlet, this pre-tertiary zone, the state would receive a 50% reimbursement, so we'd get back about $27 million. So this could cost us anywhere from $27 million to $54, $55 million if the three wells drilled by the jackup drill rig are unsuccessful.
Okay. We have any other questions? Any other concerns for the bill sponsor? Do you have anybody that's called in, signed up? Mr. Banks, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. I just called in. And if there's any questions, I'm available to speak to them.
So you support this bill?
Are we talking about 309, sir?
No, I got scrambled up here in my waywardness.
Sorry. Well, so...
280 natural gas storage and tax credits.
It's
getting late, and I'm wandering around in my bill packets.
Senator,
I apologize for that.
Senator Stedman, I think it was my powers of persuasion, telepathy, because I will be hopping on a plane tonight, and I was regretting not having a chance to comment on the 309 bill, so I appreciate that slip up.
It'll be up in the morning, so I'll remember your comment.
Thank you.
But if you could give us your thoughts on 280, please.
Yes, sir. For the record, I'm Kevin Banks, the Director of Oil and Gas, and 280 does one thing very, very nicely, and that is, and with respect to the kinds of wells that we knew would have to be drilled to create the supply of gas that we have at DNR have identified in our Cook Inlet supply study. The 280 expands those credits or tax credits to pay for those kinds of wells. Under the tax system today, only exploration wells would have received credit to the extent that O25 type credits were available and O23 type credits were available, and so for that reason there probably wouldn't have been too many wells drilled in the Cook Inlet that would have received them. With respect to the storage, there are aspects of that language that we've spent a good deal of time working with the sponsor, and I think at the end of the day we've reached some reasonable compromises about how storage leases would be administered, and we're okay with that as well.
Okay, thank you. We have a couple people signed up in the room. I'd like to go ahead and start with Mayor Sullivan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Dan Sullivan, Mayor of Anchorage. I appreciate the committee hearing this bill and the efforts of the sponsor and his co-sponsors in bringing forth a solution to what has become a very grave problem for South Central Alaska. And I can't speak for all of South Central, but certainly for the 40% of the population that resides in Anchorage, this is of critical concern to us. We had a mild winter this last winter, but two of the previous three winters before that, the gas system in Cook Inlet came near failure. And 80% of the electricity, virtually all the heat, is supplied by natural gas. And so, as mayor, I cannot allow on my watch to have a failure of a gas system that affects so many people so critically, particularly in the middle of the winter. So we put together immediately a task force of some of the top energy minds that I could get to volunteer to serve on such a task force. And they worked and met with all the utilities, all the producers, the state of Alaska, to really identify just exactly what is the problem in Cook Inlet. And the results were fairly simple. We've had 40 years of, as Representative Hawker mentioned, cheap and easily accessible natural gas. And that energy source is what has allowed Anchorage to develop into really the city it is today. And to know that the deliverability of that gas is now in question really threatens the progress of that city and the entire South Central region, for that matter. So it is one of my top priorities. And in identifying what really would be some of the solutions, gas storage certainly came to the forefront. Gas storage is used in many other regions as a means of providing consistent delivery on those days when their demand peaks so high that the existing system just can't meet the demand. And so when we met with Representative Hawker, he had proposed his Cook Inlet Recovery Act, and it touched on three key components that our task force had also concluded were the three main things that we needed to get through, at least in the short term, the problem of gas deliverability. Storage and credits for storage was number one. Certainly incentives for more production and credits for production, and working with the RCA to make sure that deliverability is considered in their decision making with contracts rather than just simply the price and normal contract terms. So his bill hit all the right notes of what our task force had concluded were essential for getting our South Central system back into reliability. The other thing that we found is that it's interesting when you look at the Cook Inlet market and the South Central market, it is so unique. It's isolated. There's no connectivity with other pipelines, other systems. You can't swap gas. You can't trade gas. You can't borrow it. And it makes it very challenging for the producers because, quite frankly, when they go to their boardrooms and look for capital to invest, the boardroom looks at a small market, an expensive market, and an isolated, not interconnected market. And that is a tough sell. So what we're finding is producers are really doing the exploration needed just to meet their contracts. And when these contracts are only 1 or 2 or 3 year contracts, that doesn't give you much confidence going forward that you're actually going to have gas for the long term. And so this bill really takes care of some of those key issues. And it's probably realistically a short-term solution. By short-term, I mean 10 to 12 to 15 years, because the total volume in Cook Inlet probably beyond a dozen years or so, even with these methods, is probably going to come into question. Well, we'll need alternative sources. But for the next decade or so, credits for gas storage, credits for production and drilling incentives, and certainly the help of the RCA in recognizing that reliability is key, we think all three elements contained in this bill do exactly what we need for Cook Inlet and for Anchorage in the short term. There's always a natural dynamic between the state protecting the interests in terms of getting the most revenue possible because, you know, as part of our job is to make sure we maximize our resources, and the producers who are certainly looking out after their shareholders. And I think it's come to the point right now, though, where at least in the Cook Inlet market, reliability trumps that normal tension where we're trying to get as much as we can revenue-wise. I think people in South Central are willing to pay more for gas as long as they have reliability. And I think this bill helps accomplish that, and we give it our full support from the municipality. And with that, Mr. Chairman, gladly answer any questions.
Thank you.
And if I could, those comments also apply to 309 as well, since okay. The door got opened.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to that, but we're just running late. We started at 7:30 this morning, so.
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Todd Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tad Owens. I'm the Director of Government and Public Affairs for Pioneer Natural Resources here in Alaska. Pioneer is a large U.S.-based independent exploration and production company. We've been active in Alaska since 2003. On the North Slope, we operate the Uguruk unit. We were the first independent company to operate a field on the North Slope, currently producing about 14 or 15,000 barrels a day. And in Cook Inlet, we operate the Cosmopolitan Field, which is an offshore resource that we are working to develop from onshore north of Anchor Point, about 5 miles. That project's in the appraisal stages. It's a very difficult, highly technically challenging, highly costly project. It's actually a resource that was discovered in 1967 by Pennzoil. We became operator in 2007 and have been diligently working towards moving that project forward. We drilled the longest ERD well in Cook Inlet history in 2007, flow tested that well. Most recently, we've been back on site. We've done some well workover activities on that well. We've fracked that well and are conducting a second flow test to try to get a better handle on the reservoir and what we might have on our hands there. It could be a significant resource in Cook Inlet, 30 to 50 million barrels of gross resource potential. Certainly would be a big shot in the arm for the Tesoro refinery if we could get that local supply moving up their direction. But again, it's a project that's, you know, it's been sitting in the drafting stages for more than 4 years, just to give you an idea of how technically challenging and capital intensive developing that project might look like. And House Bill 280, particularly the sections that deal with AS 4355023, are provisions that would certainly enhance the economics at Cosmopolitan, and I think are indicative of the kind of incentives, and as the sponsor discussed earlier, would move people towards developing some of these very marginal projects in Cook Inlet, and it's a bill that we support fully. Appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. That concludes our public testimony portion. We have the bill sponsor back. Do we have any final questions for the bill sponsor? I think there's some potential amendments. Is that correct, Senator Thomas, on this bill?
There were, but we didn't prepare them yet. Hadn't given them to your staff to take a look at anyhow, but hadn't.
Right, we're not going to do them this evening. Just
correct.
Just so I,
Mr. Chairman, yes. To that question, sir. 15 minutes before I came down here to gavel in this meeting, I was approached by the administration, who are in the midst of working with NSTAR to allow them to build a pipe, extend their existing pipe system down to new gas that was discovered near Homer. They are asking for an amendment that would expand the, I'm not even quite sure what it is yet, but it's something to the pipeline, State of Alaska's Pipeline Act. I brought it to the attention of your aide, and we're going to be working with him and the administration to see if it might be accommodated in this bill, sir.
All right, we'll take a look at that. We're going to hold this bill over and take a look at the amendments and figure out what we're going to do. Well, that concludes today's meeting. Apologize for not getting through the entire schedule, but that's the way it goes this time of year. It was a kind of a wild and crazy day. So tomorrow we'll start at 9 a.m. We'll pick up the agenda that where we left off here today with Senate Bill 309, New House Bill 365, and New House Bill 424, and move on down the list. Thanks for coming this evening. Meeting adjourned.